Well, good to be back with you. I really enjoyed my time with you last time. You're a marvelous audience. You're thoughtful, heartful, and I felt an immediate connection and a resonance. Thank you, Christian, for really a beautiful introduction, and then also the pointing out that we, I think, are kindred spirits of the soul, that our spiritual understanding is probably rooted in the same sort of universal appreciation for the divine. So last time I was with you, I was the first speaker in your series, and this time I am the last speaker in the series. So immediately we have a scriptural comparison. The first shall be last, and she'll be seen again for the first time, which is another poem. So this is quite different, and following Matthew Fox, wow. Obviously divinely ordained, right? Wouldn't have been my preference, but Matthew's amazing. He's an amazing scholar. He's a wonderful mystic. It is really perfect that I'm following him, because, you know, Matthew has written, I think, over 30 books, and I've actually read more than 30 books. So pretty obvious that I was the perfect one to follow, and we've really, between the two of us, really established literacy for you for these two weeks anyway. So I'll always like to start with a mea culpa. Sort of, it clears sort of the energy and the nerves that I have. And believe it or not, I have stood in front of an audience at least this size over 1,000 times in my career as a spiritual director. And yet, there has never been a time, including today, in which I felt like I was enough to stand here, and that I had enough, that I knew enough, that I felt confident that I had a message to share. And that being the case, I think for me is what really underlies a religion of my own. Because my whole life, up until the time that I really started on a spiritual path, was I defined myself, and maybe many of you can relate to this, by what I knew. And that if there was something missing or broken or not working in my life, it was a matter of getting more information. There's more facts that need to be got here. There is some kind of an understanding that if I had this understanding, then I would be able to navigate through this situation, through this problem, through this relationship. It was a head trip. It was based on a reliance upon sufficient facts to make me feel confident. And so when we bring that to these areas of our life, which can actually be confounded by facts, when we're talking about these non-physical matters, spiritual understanding, then we realize that there has to be some kind of a letting go of that need. And so every time that I have stood up in front of an audience like this over these last 20 years and started with that feeling like, I don't know, I don't have enough, what will I say? What are those 12 points that these great speakers of the world, you know, they have everything outlined and they have this great introduction with a funny little quip, and then they have, you know, the premise of their talk, and then they have all these illustrations, and then they have, you know, more points and more illustrations, and then they have this wrap-up and this great conclusion and a resounding ending. I don't have those. And when I tried to build my messages that way, when I was in the early stages of being a minister and preparing sermons, what I found was I could usually come up with those things, but they felt disingenuous. It felt like my mind was happy, but my heart was not. There was a level of certain boxes were checked, yeah? But then when it came to what would be felt in my beingness, there was a real sense of disconnection. So my journey, my spiritual journey, this religion of my own, and I think I commend this to people whenever they're asking for my opinion on these matters, is that authenticity is the most important aspect of spirituality. That there can be nothing other than a religion of your own. There can be nothing other than a religion of your own if it is yours, if it is true. Otherwise, it is up here. We can learn all, we can take classes on world religions. We can understand intellectually these concepts of spirituality and, you know, all the notions of, that have transcended through the ages. But if we don't have a sense of it being what we are, if it doesn't feel like it's alive in us, if it doesn't feel like there is no separation between the idea and the experience of the idea, then it is not ours. So this whole journey, my whole journey of life, and for many of us who have been on the path, is not that we need to get more information. Although that can be a fun pursuit, if it remains an activity of the mind, if it remains a one more way of checking more boxes of intellectual understanding, then all it does is it creates more reasons for us to live in this place of knowing but not experiencing. And that is what robs us of the richness of what a spiritual life can be. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Am I just talking for myself here? This is my journey. My sense is that when Thomas More talks in the beginning about this crisis in our world where people are leaving religions in droves, leaving the religions of their parents and their grandparents and what has been their traditions that have, you know, lived in their families for long times. When he marks that as not a bad thing, but a good thing, I completely agree with him. You see, because there are some traditions that, you know, can be marvelously enriching to us. Yeah? But there can be the tradition that says, I will do this because if it's good enough for my family, it's good enough for me, is not a journey into authenticity. It is riding on, you know, sometimes we want to stand on the shoulders of those who have gone before us. If when we stand on those shoulders, we feel that we are standing in our own truth, that that's our journey, that it's our mission, that we are equally called by something that arises from within us. And this is what the spiritual life is all about. It's an inward journey. The word in the scripture, it says you must repent, you know, and that word comes from the Greek word that means to turn back, to turn around. You know, so this notion is that when you and I live our life completely externally referenced, yeah, where we just are always trying to get to feel better by changing life out here, we are, you know, sort of rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic of life, yeah? And that the journey, when we finally come to ourself, it's understanding that there is that which in us which has the capacity to be with life, however it's appearing. And that's what has been the thread of gold for me, was realizing that it's when I come to the end of my own resourcefulness, when the extent of how far my intellect can take me in giving me a sense of order or a sense of understanding or a sense of making sense out of life, when this no longer serves me, when it becomes the end of the line, when it becomes that sort of moment like the prodigal son where, you know, he runs out his plan for life and he uses all of his, everything that he can take and expends it in trying to make a good life and then finds himself empty and broken and hungry and thirsting. there is that moment for all of us when we say, if this is not working anymore, then I need to let go of this plan. And that's the invitation. What I've found in life is that limitations are invitations to something deeper and something truer. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's just, here it is. It's just what happens with me. It's this letting go of what I know and allow the unknown to become the field out of which something is born. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense. How can it be that not knowing can actually be a fertile field out of which something beautiful can arise? How can it be? I don't know. I don't have the answer. And yet, time and time again, this is what happens. I mean, my wife and I made two boys. Well, we know our part in that, but that was really pretty simple. Compare it to the complexity, the marvel of these two young men that are in the world. So out of not knowing how that all happens, there was these amazing complexities and beautiful demonstrations of something much greater than ourselves, manifesting something that we dearly love and is a blessing in our life and in the world. That's just one out of thousands of examples of how not knowing can actually be the field out of which our deepest and most profound spirituality and faith can arise. Does anyone have an example? You may have moments in your life where maybe you've just come to the place where you just don't know the answer, yeah? Where you're just confounded because you can't figure out what to do. And, you know, there's that part of us that never really wants to give up, because there's a sense that the answers are to come, and that we can do it. We can figure it out. And yet most of our lives happen without our having anything whatsoever to do with it. I mean, how much did you have to do with, you know, I mean, at a universal cosmic level, how much do you have to do with the planet staying in orbit and the stars and everything else? And how much did you have to do with your senses operating the way they're operating without you being in control or having any concern that your breathing is happening, that your heart is beating, that there's a million functions going on in your body all the time? You don't know how that's going on. Oh, you can probably have some physiological understanding about some of those things, but really, do you know how all of this works together synchronistically and perfectly? There's so much we don't know. And some of the most marvelous things in our universe, in our world, in our experience, are things that we have no control over and we know nothing about. So this is an invitation for us to say some of the most marvelous things that arise in our experience of life are not things that I'm controlling. They're not things that I understand even. So why would that not be maybe the most important element of a spiritual life? That if we truly want to live a life that feels rich and feels fulfilling and feels like we can be guided to do the maximum amount of good and service in our world, that there wouldn't be a really important component of us knowing that we don't know, and to be open and to yield and to surrender. Ooh, that's a word that we don't like too well. No one wants to wave the white flag, you know, we're tough. But surrender, not in surrendering in terms of giving up, but surrender in terms of giving way. How about that? Giving way to something greater. And you know, it, like, even in this moment right now, I'm giving way. I'm giving way. There's a part of me that says, I need to know more. I need to know more. These people need me to know more, and I need to know more. There's that voice. There's another part of me, because I've done this 1,000 times before, that says, give it up. Give way to that which knows. Because what I'm trusting when I'm giving way to that, that knows every one of you. That trusts in divine order or cosmic order, or the matchmaking of consciousness, the knowing of how all things work together for good. And this mind of mine, it gets too fine, and it tries to particularize my expressions and my activities and my behaviors. It confounds this whole grand, unlimited sense of life and what can happen when left to its own, when left to be what it is, unrestricted, unfettered by my own preferences. Does that make sense? That there is some divine and grand intelligence here that's in charge of not just your body and your heartbeat and the breath and the stars and the planets, but it's in charge of every energy that moves through you and the formation of thoughts that come through your mind and guide your thoughts and guide your actions, and you don't know where it comes from. You know, the greatest things in life, we don't know where it comes from, and yet we don't give it as much sway or as much credence as we do something that we can touch and see and know intellectually. So it's a slippery slope, yeah? It's like, I want to know. I need to know. But I know that if I need to know, that I don't trust in the unknown. There's a line that maybe I'll leave you with that's, not knowing, what if? Let's just do this. Not knowing is knowing at all. What if not knowing is knowing at all? Close your eyes for a minute, if you would, with me. When you go to this place of not knowing, which is pretty hard to do because now you're trying to think, what is not knowing? And if I even think about what not knowing is, aren't I thinking about knowing something about not knowing? And if I know nothing about not knowing, oh, maybe that's it. Maybe I don't need to go any further. But what if not knowing is knowing it all, in the sense that if I don't know, if I surrender the need to know, then I am first and finally available to that which does, which may be beyond my conscious understanding or awareness, but is nonetheless, we've already established, present in this universe, in this life, in my body. So opening your eyes, my most recent study or foray of spirituality has been in the Vedanta teachings, the Advaita teachings of Hinduism, which is the strictly non-dual awareness, which means there's only one thing going on, and that whatever that one thing is, we can know this to be as individuals in this cosmic universe. We can know this as awareness, because if I question you and say, who are you? There's a whole litany of questions that come up around that, and we can get into our biography, but then we have to go beyond the body at some point, And then who were you before you came into a body? And that sort of all sort of gets really kind of wooey-wooey and very vague. But the only thing, and I'll shorten this up for you, but the only thing that you can really say, think about this, is that you are. What you are may not be so clear, but how many people know that you are? I know that I am. I mean, I don't know anything else, but I do know that I am. I can say that with absolute truth. That place is like the baseline for my spiritual understanding today. Because it affords me a connection with existence, with life, with beingness, with awareness. It's what explains how I know anything else that's going on in my life, any object that I perceive, even my thoughts, are only perceivable because I'm aware. And what is interesting now is that the quantum science community is looking at consciousness, which would be parallel, you know, similar to awareness, as possibly being the most fundamental part of reality, right? Up there are equal with space, time, matter. Huh? That awareness, which is this light of consciousness, is fundamental. It explains everything that you're aware of. Without consciousness, there is no space, there is no time, there is no matter, because without awareness, how would you know? So this is, to me, this is this kind of this pure place that I can stand when all of the doubts swirl through my mind, when I don't know what I believe anymore. Yeah. When something that has been held to be, you know, an aspect of my faith, it just gets shattered or gets undermined by difficult circumstances in life. But when I can stand in a place of knowing that I am, and that this I am is the baseline of life and of reality, of beingness, in that place I can feel a kinship, a connection with all people, because every one of you in the room said, I know that I am. And it's in that state of existence, of not knowing anything else really for sure, but that you are. And that all of this beauty, all of this wonder, all of this creation comes out of that. That's a place where we can stand, where we are not apart, where we are not separate from each other, that we share. We share this light of consciousness. And out of that light of consciousness, we have the ability to create together according to our intentions. And this is what, of course, the quantum scientists are always also saying, is that it is from knowing that there is no objective reality out here apart from our participation in it. Yeah? We understand that. Because without you, you know, nothing exists. How could it exist without your awareness? There, a tree falls in the forest, does it make any sound? Who knows? Unless you're there. Yeah, the animals do, and that's and they would have to tell you, and you would have to be conscious to hear the animals. So it's just sort of this baseline of not knowing, but it's in that not knowing that I feel connected with all of life. I don't know if any of this makes any sense to you, but to me it's profound. You know, it's where I've landed in this journey, which is studying different faiths and different religions. And I'll leave you with a final I can't read the clock from here. It's a glaring. What does it say? When do you stop? When should I stop? Now? Oh, 15 minutes. Okay. I could stop now, too. We can talk, too. Right. Yeah. We could shorten it up. Yeah. So this is the story that that was really profound for me. When I went through seminary, and this was 20 years ago, and, you know, this is where you're supposed to really build your credo, and so you can go out and be a spiritual leader and, you know, really have a, you know, a great faith to share. And I had the opposite experience. So I got there, and I was there about 3 months, and I had to write a paper about, I don't even remember what the paper was about, something about what I believe, of course. And I sat down to write it, and I just felt empty inside. I just felt completely devoid of, everything was up for grabs, you know? Just doubt, I was just really racked with doubt. And when I tried to grab some affirmations of truth, and they all felt disingenuous and completely disconnected from what I knew to be true. So I'm like, I got to turn this paper in, and I don't believe anything. And so I, being really into authenticity back then too, I didn't fake it and go, you know, make up something and write it and turn it in. So I just wrote. I said, you know, I'm empty. I don't know. I don't know what I believe. I came here when I had a faith, and now it's gone. I want my money back, you know. I'm a fraud. You know, I shouldn't be here. You know, all that stuff came tumbling out. And I wrote it, and, you know, in an act of complete faith, I turned it in. So, like a week later, I get the paper back. I could see the red ink from a distance away, you know. So I'm like, oh, man, I'm so afraid to read this. It's going to be, not only is it going to be a no credit, but probably going to be some choice words about, you know, that I am a fraud, that I shouldn't be here. And what am I doing here if I can't write a paper? And there was a very small paragraph that said, great work. Thank you for being honest with us. You are right where you are supposed to be. And I had used the word in my paper about feeling like I was like an empty cup. And the professor wrote, stay with the empty cup. When you get to the bottom, you will find God. So what if, knowing nothing, is the portal into knowing everything you need to know? What if there are times when your mind is your best friend, and there are times when your mind is absolutely the obscuration of the truth? This is difficult for us who are thoughtful, and I know you are thoughtful people, that my finest intellectual moments have not been my deepest spiritual experiences. And my deepest spiritual experiences have been when my mind took a vacation, when there was a withdrawing of understanding, yeah? There was a withdrawing of the need for understanding, and there was a willingness to let go of understanding and to know what's left when I don't know. When you can't figure your life out, what's left? What remains true? That's what I began to find at this empty cup experience. I had started, when I got there, I'd started with this really nice chain of all these little beliefs and affirmations of truth, these little precepts, and, you know, there's a nice long chain, and people could ask me, and I could say, here they are, yeah. I could do like a QVC presentation, you know. You have this lovely chain today. It's going to look lovely on you. Come to my church, you know. And by the time I left seminary 2 years later, very short chain, but very strong links. Strong links. I knew less, but what I knew authentically, deeply. They didn't come from here. They came from the bottom of the cup. They came from what remained, what was in my felt experience, my knowing aspect of being without concept. I think kids today who are asking that religion need to make sense to them are absolutely on the right path. Because this notion of faith that we say, well, you just have to have faith. You may not be able to see it. But it must be an understanding faith. It must be a felt faith. Not just a magical thinking faith. It must be rooted in something that you already know, that you know, that you know. For some of us, it can be love. You know, when people say, well, I don't believe in God because I can't see it, or there's no evidence, right? And then sometimes you say, have you ever been in love? Yeah. Have you ever experienced love? Yeah. How do you know love is real? How do you know? I can't tell you. How do I know that there's a power greater than myself? I can't explain it to you. I know. And I know because I've let go of everything that I have thought I needed to validate the existence of a higher power. Whatever is true must stand up when everything else goes away, right? Isn't that why sometimes, and maybe some of you are in this situation where you have come to finding your faith when life has been the most difficult? Because when we identify ourselves with that which changes, and that which changes then puts us into question about who am I without this situation, without this person, without this amount of money, without this status in my life. When that goes away, then we are called into more of an empty cup experience and saying, what's left? If I'm not my job, if I'm not this relationship, if I'm not this status in life, then what am I? What is left? And what remains is evidence of what you are. Not what you've added unto your essence, but the essence of your being itself. We could say what God created. So my journey of faith has been enhanced by my losses. Anyone relate? It's the hero's journey, and it's the prodigal son, and it's all these wonderful references. You know, those who seek to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life will find it. And he's talking at two different relative levels. He's talking the relative and the absolute. When we're willing to give up the relative aspects of who we think we are, which is our jobs and our security and our possessions and so forth, when those things are seen to be not essentially what we are, then we are closer to understanding essentially what we are. And I've lost all of those things. I've lost jobs and money, and I haven't lost a relationship. That's one thing I've held on to. Denise and I, you know, like the scene in the Titanic, we've clung tenaciously to each other, except we stayed. I didn't drown. Well, actually, I did. But that's a much longer story. It's been said that true spiritual path is a process of subtraction. I think it was Meister Eckhart who said that. It's letting go of what we're not that allows us to see what we are. So emptiness, form, emptiness, form. There's this paradox that we can see, that we, a part of us, it wants to be attached to what we can see and feel and taste and touch. And then there's another part of us in which all of that is perceived. We can see it arise and we can see it go. And yet we are what remains. This is my current understanding of a religion of my own. And I think any journey that anyone wants to take that gets them to a place where they feel that they can stand confidently in knowing themselves more truly, and that it stands up to the tests, to the refining fires of life and circumstances, is a path that's valid. And I mean, it doesn't mean it has to be any particular path. I think every faith tradition has some version of what I've described here today. Some aspect of letting go and finding what's true and what remains. And anyway, it's worked for me. And I commend it to you as a legitimate practice that each one of us can follow regardless of our faith tradition. Is finding out, what do we know when the mind can no longer make sense of life? What remains? What are we? What is the awareness? What is the consciousness? And perhaps is that not the divine essence of our being that never can be taken from us? My sense is that that is true. And time will continue to test that premise, but so far it holds up. So that's all I have to share with you today. And I'll stick around till after the break and we can talk some more amongst ourselves. So thank you. Thank you.